This is Mitchell Dye with Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
Dr. Dennis Muller joins me on the line now from the University of Melbourne. He is a media ethics expert from the School of Culture and Communication. Doctor, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mitchell.
Now, I wanted to get you on not only to talk about this research that you're going to be starting in terms of attitudes towards asylum seekers, but I also wanted to talk about the media responses to what's happened in Paris. I mean, that was a massive event. Was there anything that you noticed in terms of our media response to Paris and obviously social media changing how we report on things these days?
Yeah, well, our media, of course, treated it as a very large story, because it's very important global story, but also because it happened in France that we feel some sort of affinity with. We have lots of people who speak French. We have lots of cultural ties with France. We identify with French people as people in a Western democracy. So when things happen to people who are like us, people we identify with, that's a bigger story than when it happens to people we don't identify with, and that comes up all the time. You see the coverage of disasters in third world countries, and it's lucky to make a 14-word brief. But when it happens to people that we identify with, it becomes a bigger story. So that's one of the factors. The other one, of course, is that Australia's involved in the Middle East. We've had our own terrorism events here, and so people can easily see that, or easily imagine that it happening in a country like ours could also happen here. So they're the factors that are going to make it a big story. And broadly speaking, I thought the media covered it pretty comprehensively and pretty well. The thing that media need to be careful of, though, with these things, especially with this story, is equating terrorism with Islam. Because that gives the IS people a propaganda win. You see, they would claim, or they do claim, that they are authorized by Islam. Well, they might be authorized by a small 7th century sect of Islam, but that would be like saying that the whole of the Christian tradition could be held to account for the Dutch Reformed Church's support of apartheid. So the media do need to be careful, and sometimes I think in Australia we're not careful enough to limit the links between religion and terrorism. And I think, for example, there's a heading in The Australian last Monday which talked about declaring war on Islamists. Well, really, the story was about declaring war on terrorists. And I think that language matters in these things.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I believe that they are probably linked towards Islam, but as you said, a very small group and a very extreme view, so it's important not to tar all of Islam with that one brush, and people coming out and saying, close all the mosques and that sort of thing is just an outrageous response.
It can fuel antagonism and division in the community, and we've more than enough of that as it is.
And we've talked about this idea that we talk a lot more about an attack when it happens in Paris as opposed to some of the other places around the world like Baghdad and all that sort of thing. I mean, is that justified to do that? I mean, you've talked about the fact that we have some ties to France because we're both Western democracies. So is it justified that they get a lot more coverage? Because some quarters of the community were quite critical of that.
Yes, they were, and at a level of principle, you can say, well, every human life is of equal value, so the loss of one life in Baghdad is just as tragic as the loss of one life in Paris. And, of course, that's true as a matter of principle. But as a matter of news value, which is what drives decision-making in the media, it gives way to other drivers of decision making, and those drivers include, very importantly, that sense of what I call proximity. So how close do we identify, how closely do we identify with the victims? How close to home was it? A story that happens in Melbourne is a bigger story than a story that happens in Jakarta, and so on. And so geographic and cultural closeness play a part. So whilst it's true that, of course, every human life is of equal value, news media are not in the business of, in a sense, being driven by philosophical principles. They are there to tell stories that they think will interest their readers most, and so those are the factors that drive the amount of prominence the story will get.
Yeah, very well said. And what about social media? Because we saw, for example, the Facebook flag situation where people could change their profile picture to the French flag as a sign of solidarity. But again, criticism directed at Facebook because people weren't changing their Facebook profile picture to some of the flags of other countries that had been affected by disaster.
Well, I mean, I think that is pushing idealism a bit far. Where would you stop? You'd have to have every flag of every country in the world. I mean, there's been two world wars. Where do you draw the line? This was particularly a response to the attacks in Paris. So it seemed to me that it was one of those real benefits of social media that it gave millions of ordinary people who would never have access to a radio microphone or a printing press or a television channel the opportunity to make some public statement of solidarity with the French. I think it was really one of the real benefits of social media, the opportunity to say, well, here, you know, I might be sitting here in Melbourne, but I'm in a position to be able to say I am aware of what's happened in France. I feel for the French people. I stand with France. I think that's a wonderful opportunity for people to have.
Now, what about this research that you're going to get underway, a focus group looking at asylum seekers and, I suppose, our responses and attitudes? Tell us about that.
Well, I've actually completed the focus groups. Right. I've drafted a report, but it isn't released yet. But one of the things that I've found that I'm talking about at the moment, because it's interesting in the light of the Paris attacks, is that some people in the groups, not by any means the majority, but quite a number of people in different places, said that they do get information about, you know, they do get news from social media, but because social media is so immediate, I mean, you get the stuff more or less in real time, and because it's sometimes so intimate in nature, and there was stuff from the Paris attacks that fell into that category, that it actually heightens people's sense of threat because they feel closer to these events than they objectively are. I mean, the events in Paris happened on the other side of the world, the people that we don't know, just total strangers. But when somebody sends a Facebook post or posts something on Facebook, which, for example, is a blood-smeared top, a woman was wearing a sleeveless cream top with a big blood smear across the left-hand side, and has underneath it a paragraph in which the young woman describes what it was like to lie among the dead in the Bataclan Theatre for an hour, playing dead. It gives a real level of personal intimacy, a personal connection, and immediacy to events which, if they'd come, you know, as a report through a newspaper or something, would have seemed very far away and emotionally remote. So that is a real phenomenon. It came out in quite a few of the groups that it increased people's sense of being personally at risk. So it really has what seems to be a quite a noticeable psychological effect on people.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right, because I suppose with social media, you're getting it really as a first-hand account rather than third and fourth-hand as you might get through the media. So it's like there's a person right there on your news feed telling you the story about what they saw.
Exactly. So it's not some reporter filtering it for you. This is the actual source talking directly to the audience, and that's another very powerful aspect of social media as a news medium.
And I suppose social media was probably the channel that people first heard about the Paris attacks, because not many people are sitting there with ABC 24 turned on 24 hours a day, and they're not necessarily looking at news sites all the time, but they are usually constantly monitoring their social media feeds.
That's true. And some people have a kind of an alarm system on their phone, so that if a big story happens, and if they've liked, say, news.com or someone on their Facebook, then there will be an alert, an alarm will go off to say, hey, look at this.
Yeah.
So you've got the news media sort of tapping people on the shoulders these days. They don't have to be, as you say, sitting down watching ABC 24, nor do they even have to be monitoring their phones. The phones will speak to them and say, hey, listen, Bella, look at this.
Yeah, that's it. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciated some really interesting insights there about how the media reported on it, and I suppose the responses to what happened.
Thank you very much, Mitchell.
My pleasure. Dr. Dennis Moller there from the University of Melbourne, an expert when it comes to media ethics. And, of course, social media comes under that umbrella and how we responded to the Paris situation. We will go to a break. After the break, program technical commentator Trent Geddes will be joining us. He'll be looking at the latest news from the technical world. There's plenty to talk about this morning. And also Wiley Sims from Smartline will be with us straight after the 10 o'clock news.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.